Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 298 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host, once again. And Happy New Year. Welcome to the year 2022. I apologize for those of you who have looked for us for the last couple of weeks. We took a much-needed mental health break at the end of 2021, ran away to Kauai, the island in Hawaii, with the family. And to be honest with you, didn't really think too much about The Law Entrepreneur while I was sitting poolside in Hawaii. I know it's a first world kind of problem to have, but thank you to everybody who reached out to me and said, hey, where the heck is the episode? I apologize for not letting you know that ahead of time. Today, my guest is Lori Gilbertson. Now, Lori has a very interesting career. She started off as a district attorney in the Queens County, New York office and spent a lot of time processing, you know, the kinds of crimes and trials that a district attorney in that location deals with, and then transitioned from there to being a fixture on court TV along with other New York media outlets, commenting on cases being in the news and developing her communication skills and honing that skill set to the point where she was able to provide counseling and training to folks using when she was with then the Practicing Law Institute, PLI, to help attorneys develop those skills. And now she's really graduated and started her own practice, her own firm called Tribeca Blue Consulting, and that provides training and education to attorneys and other professional services on the nuances and importance of communication, particularly as a form of leadership and as a way of communicating what's going on. And I'm delighted to have her with us today to talk about those topics. So without any further delay, here is Lori Gilbertson. Lori Gilbertson, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you so much for having me, Neil.
I'm delighted that you could join me today, Lori. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Oh, thanks so much. I am a former criminal prosecutor turned television legal analyst turned legal educator turned entrepreneur. So I have worn many hats as a lawyer and still continue to that today. I'm currently the founder and owner of Tribeca Blue Consulting, where I work with executives, entrepreneurs, and trial lawyers to develop and hone their communications and public speaking skills. So, you know, good communication is really essential. And it's one of those skills that often gets overlooked. So there are so many just easy, practical ways to make communication clear and engaging and persuasive. And that's what I do with my clients. So I work with them one-on-one, sometimes in training, sometimes in workshops. And it's honestly something that people start off really dreading and end up realizing can be a lot of fun.
I find it interesting that for me personally, I didn't bring too much of a skill set to the table when I became an attorney, other than, as my mother would say, a gift of the gab and an ability to write well. And I think those two skill sets have served me better than I, you know, might have hoped. I don't know that everybody has that advantage of being able to articulate, you know, exactly their point of view or in a coherent manner or engaging. And certainly when you get into trial work, you know, it becomes more theater at times. And so that communication is really important.
It really is. And, you know, it's often referred to as a soft skill. And I completely disagree with that. I think it's one of the most important skills. And You know, you talk about kind of the theater of communicating, that idea of having this great delivery, but it starts so much earlier than that. And it really starts with kind of knowing yourself, knowing what you want to put out there before you even think about kind of the tactics you want to use to communicate those ideas. And that's something that a lot of people don't take the time to really get into. And that's what makes, you know, all that kind of preparation and self-awareness is what really makes communication shine. And also, you know, the gift of the gab doesn't hurt.
Yeah. Well, and as you well know, there is a pretty wide chasm between what we think of as trial attorneys. Most of the public, when they think of attorneys, they think of trial attorneys because that's what they see in the media, on TV, in the movies. Right. But there's a big gap between those silver-tongued orators, the Perry Masons of the world, and the reality of what trial litigation really is. I remember sitting through my first couple of trials thinking, holy cow, that was poorly communicated.
Yeah, I mean, poorly communicated sometimes. And some of it is really technical and you know, boring stuff to everybody but the lawyers who are in it. And, you know, a real key to communicating well as a trial attorney, whether you're just walking into court and doing a calendar call, whether you're doing a deposition, whether you're doing a hearing, is really being able to kind of take all of that information and make it easy for the person who's listening. Whether that's a judge, opposing counsel, the jury, you know, do your work beforehand and make it easy and interesting for your audience. And that's something a lot of lawyers don't do also. You know, chalk it down to, you know, maybe not enough time, chalk it down, I think, a lot to lack of training. And also just, it's not easy. You know, that can be hard work.
Well, yeah, it's not easy. It's not like falling off a log. There's more involved there. So let's go back, circle back, yeah, and trace this a little bit, so we get a sense of where Tribeca Blue Consulting now fits into the grand scheme of things.
Sure.
So I know from our previous communications that you're local to the DC area originally. You went to school here, law school here in DC. Is that correct?
I did. I went to American in DC, where I caught the trial bug and went. I worked so hard in the criminal justice clinic my third year of law school that I missed enough classes that I was in danger of not graduating because they weren't going to pass me on one of my classes. So that's how that's how much I really loved it in law school. And I had an amazing experience in law school. And I'm a native as well,
right?
Like you.
So. Right. And so then you moved up to New York into the district attorney's office up there. I guess we all kind of understand, you know, the challenges of being a district attorney in a big suburban setting like that. There's a lot of going on, and it's a fast-paced world. But I'm curious, coming out of that, how you kind of transitioned into court TV and some of your work with the media in that area. How did that come to be?
Yeah, well, you know, being an assistant district attorney in New York City was my dream job. So I was at the Queens County District Attorney's Office. I did that for 10 years, and I pretty much walked on air. I mean, I was just so excited to be able to kind of, you know, do justice and feel like I was really working hard at something every day that mattered, you know, even if it was just in a small way. So at the end of 10 years of, you know, really seeing the worst things that people do to each other in terrible ways. And I did a lot of, you know, sex crimes and some domestic violence cases and, you know, people who are supposed to love each other and the way they treat each other. Some of it just got to the point where I was burnt out. I was finished and I was ready to go. And so after that, I transitioned into a job with the stock exchange, you know, living in New York City. That's a great opportunity. Yeah. Worked on some white collar crime cases and it just did not resonate with me in the same way. It was very difficult for me going from trying, you know, violent felonies and sex crimes, organized crime, to going to kind of fining brokers because they were trading after hours. While that's important, it didn't really resonate with me as much. Around that same time, I got married and I was starting a family. So I was kind of entering into a different phase of life. And so while I kind of transitioned into something that was a little less, you know, time intensive, I missed everything about what I had done at the district attorney's office. I just miss kind of being in the heart of talking about these cases that were all over in the news, and that I felt like, you know, I would watch things and I just kind of felt like the point of the cases, the law in the cases wasn't necessarily being adequately explained or explained in a way that, you know, people who weren't lawyers could really understand, you know, the import, not the salacious details, but like why these cases are out there, why people are interested in them and what effect they would have. And so I thought, well, maybe I could try that. And so I did. I networked and networked and networked. I didn't really know anyone and eventually got a tryout at Court TV and apparently did well enough that they kept inviting me back, which was awesome.
How about that?
Yeah. And, you know, it was kind of keeping that fire that I had for this area of law and this area of work. And, you know, honestly, being on television that way was kind of just a joy at that point in life. These were the kind of things that, you know, dilemmas and points of law and facts and interesting details that we used to sit around at the district attorney's office, you know, either, you know, over coffee in the morning, over, you know, as you said, adult beverages at night, right, and just talk about. So this was like, oh, they're going to put me on TV, do my hair and makeup and, you know, tell me to talk about it. Sure. That's awesome.
Yeah, really. So you still have the buzz from being, you know, in the action, but without having to, you know, actually appear before the court.
Right. Right. You know, people would say, well, how are you comfortable doing live television? And to me, it was like, what do you mean? It used to be, you know, sometimes literally, you know, life and death. You know, you are responsible for, you know, victims of terrible crimes, and also for making sure that you do justice, you know, to the people who are, you know, the defendants in these cases.
And somebody's liberty might be at stake here.
Somebody's liberty, absolutely, and safety.
So, live TV, piece of cake.
Live TV was nothing compared to that. Absolutely.
Exactly. And so I'm going to imagine that you also got an opportunity to comment on some cases that were maybe a little bit outside your normal coverage zone, if you will.
I did. And those were really interesting. You know, the great thing about Court TV when they were kind of running it this way was these weren't 2-minute sound bites. You know, these weren't kind of, you know, 30 seconds at the top of the hour each hour. These were, you know, 2-hour long in-depth coverage and conversation with, you know, hosts who were, you know, former trial lawyers who really knew what they were talking about. So that was a fantastic way to kind of enter that whole media arena, and definitely a way that was very suited to the kinds of things I wanted to bring to it. And, you know, when I think back, you know, one of the cases that we handled, what, you know, that I got to talk about was, you know, a civil rights case from, you know, 30, 40 years ago that was eventually brought. And it was just, you know, resonant and emotional and completely different than a lot of the cases I had handled.
Well, one of those things about the law in general that I like is that you can branch out. You can do different things within the industry and within the profession. And so now, even being on TV, you're able to branch out a little bit and kind of flex and learn more things than you would have otherwise learned. And even though a lot of it was simply, you know, having the same conversations you would have had you been in the district attorney's office, some things were new and new skill sets. New skill sets had to be developed. I mean, yes,
completely.
Yes, it was easy, at least at first blush, to sit before a live TV audience. But still, there were, I'm gathering from what you're saying, that there was additional skill sets that you had to learn and refine.
Oh, yes. I mean, as much as I say that the pressure was different or a bit non-existent for me on live TV because of what I was used to in front of juries, I'd never really been on camera. You know, we were not allowed to talk to the press except under such special circumstances, you know, as when I was trying cases that got press attention. So I didn't have any of that experience at all. You know, where do you look? How do you sit? What's, you know, how long do you want to speak for? When do you respond? You know, and another skill set, you know, that I really learned was, you know, as much as I thought I was good at doing last minute things, because, you know, as a trial attorney, you'll get something thrown on you and you got to think on your feet, but there's a well of preparation behind that. I would get a call and say, you know, this is going on. We want to get you on air, you know, sometime over the next hour. Can you talk about this? And I would get those calls. I was working a regular job then. I was working in legal education and doing a lot of the media and TV stuff in addition to that. And so I would be sitting at work on hold, you know, on hold with one hand, researching with the other and thinking, okay, I'm going to be put on air in 30 minutes and let me learn about this new law that's come out, or, you know, something that is, you know, right in the news right now that just broke that I don't know anything about, but I can learn it. And so that skill of being able to kind of consolidate all that information and then get it out there in a clear and coherent way wasn't a totally new skill, but it was really pushed to the limit, I think, with the television and radio stuff I did.
If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients. You know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And I'm sensing that it's that refinement of your skill set while, as you said, you know, still working in the legal environment, aside from the on-camera work, that got you thinking that, hey, there's something here to be taught to attorneys on a broader scale that I might be able to make available to attorneys on a broader scale. Is that kind of where the germination of this idea started?
You know, it's interesting because I love that we're doing the Law Entrepreneur podcast. And we're talking about attorneys. When I started Tribeca Blue, I did not intend to really coach attorneys or train attorneys. I really didn't. I was at a point where
you'd had your fill of attorneys.
I had my fill. Yes, you got it. And look, Neil, I come from a family of attorneys. You know, my father is a litigator. Even at 80, he is still doing amazing things. My brother, my younger brother, is an attorney. You know, we have other attorneys in the family. So it was inundated with
law. You were lousy with attorneys in your life.
Oh my gosh. Our dinner table. I mean, and trial attorneys too. So you can imagine how that went. But, you know, I had moved with my family from New York City and the suburbs of New York to Denver. My husband had a job opportunity out here and I've got three young kids. And we moved. And along with that big change and transition, I was really seeking kind of a career transition as well. And I did not intend to really market to lawyers or work with lawyers at all. I thought I just want, you know, kind of, you say it jokingly, but I really was just, you know, not feeling like the legal profession at that point was going to be my audience. And I just didn't really, you know, a lot of lawyers are not that open to coaching or learning or getting, you know,
I was going to ask you that about why are they so resistant to learning at times?
Oh, goodness.
I mean, I have my opinions.
I want to hear. I'd love to hear what you think, too. I think that law is, by its nature, a very conservative profession, and it is slow, almost glacial. Yeah. To change in model, change in pricing, change in outlook is so difficult for, I think, the profession as a whole. And there have been lots of interesting things going on, you know, I think even over the past few years and especially spawned by the pandemic. And I think your podcast and what you do is an amazing example of something really progressive and different in the law that the law needs. And I think you having a big audience is showing like this is really something the law needs.
That wasn't there 5 years ago.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, that was something I wanted. You know, I wanted to branch out my talks. You know, I must have reached out to probably 50 to 100 lawyers through contacts when I started Tribeca Blue, thinking, of course, you know, these are my people this is who I should work with, and really got nothing. I mean, I went and spoke at some law firms. I did get a few, you know, speaking engagements. And I just found that, you know, trial lawyers who are more experienced think they don't need it. And people who are less experienced in law firms think they're never going to use it in terms of trial skills. Mm-hmm. They're not going to get there for a while. And then lawyers overall, I think, just are resistant to that kind of change, you know, to something different. It takes a long time to build that in and to kind of give that social proof that this is something important, this is something good, and this is something we need to open ourselves up to learn.
I think, you know, my view, having spoken to hundreds of attorneys here, I think there is a pervasive attitude that once we get done with law school, we are so done with learning, and I just want to get out there and do the job. And I think what happens is attorneys are oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes, are really, really narrowly focused and can't see where something like the services that you offer could benefit. They don't think of that as being part of the skill set that good lawyering requires. And listen, how many attorneys do you know that continue to take writing classes to learn to communicate more effectively using the written word once they got out of law school?
Right. Not many. No. Not many. And, you know, I worked for the Practicing Law Institute, which is a legal education provider.
Yeah, tell me about that a little
bit. Based out of New York. Yeah, I'm, you know, just on the topic of legal education, I ended up there, answered a New York Times ad when I was figuring out what I wanted to do next, just happened to connect with the woman who became the first female president of that organization, who is just an incredible, incredible woman named Anita Shapiro. And, you know, lawyers there, I did work with an incredible caliber of lawyer there who were so dedicated in a way that you're talking about that some lawyers are not, to learning and teaching. You know, the people who presented at PLI programs, and it's an entirely volunteer faculty. So, you know, a good bit of my job was recruiting kind of the lawyers who you see on the front page of the New York Times or the Washington Post trying these huge cases, to volunteer to give their time and come in and teach other lawyers. And what I found was it was often those people who were most open to it, most dedicated to it, and wanted to devote their time to sharing their craft and their expertise.
Interesting.
So there are lawyers out there who are open to it. I think those are the best lawyers. And it's a mindset change that needs to happen. And the way that I kind of came to, you know, as right in The Godfather, they say, you know, you want out and they just keep pulling you back in. What happened with me is I with Tribeca Blue, kind of opened this whole new world of coaching and training executives, mostly startup founders and entrepreneurs who were, you know, doing a lot of pitching, needed to really work on that, you know, because their business depended on it. And then also people who were just using communication in their daily lives in all sorts of professional and personal ways and needed some coaching and training. And that opened this whole new world to me that I was very grateful for, because I think law can get very myopic in the law, you know, can be this very closed world. When I was a district attorney, I pretty much lived on Queens Boulevard for 10 years, you know, professionally, and didn't see a whole lot outside of those courtrooms, except when I was going to, you know, crime scenes or precincts. And this opened a whole new world. That was really wonderful for me in terms of, you know, you talk about getting new skills. That really forced me to kind of up my skill set to be able to be of value to people in these kind of different environments. And how I came to the trial, you know, to working with attorneys again, was a friend and kind of former colleague called me up and said, you know, he was at a small firm and said, I have a trial and it's starting and no one's giving me training. No one's second seating me. I don't know what to do. Can you help me? And I said, okay, let's do it. And so we just sat down and we did, I think, three, four, five sessions together. And we got out, you know, we had a big whiteboard and we mapped out the opening and we mapped out the closing. We mapped out the witness order. We practiced. We went through things. We did kind of a whole mock trial. And, you know, just so that he would feel really comfortable representing his client when he went into court. And it went so well And it was just, it was effective. And honestly, for me, it was fun. It was really fun, you know, just kind of back to my roots that I thought, you know, more attorneys could benefit from this, especially in the solo arena where you don't have huge professional development, you know, or training in your firm, where you can't maybe afford to get all sorts of CLE and training and continuing legal education. This could really be of service. So that's how it started. That's how I got pulled back in.
Well, it fills that void that's left behind, you know, solo and small firm practitioners. Now, when they go into this realm, you know, straight out of law school in particular, or shortly thereafter, they haven't had the benefit of that, you know, concerned mentor, senior mentor, who would have stood at that whiteboard with them and coached them through the process of presenting a case on at trial. And so it very much is a need. I can see even today, with all the resources that we have, particularly those online and in video resources, there you need only go to the circuit court and sit in for a day's worth of dockets to know how this is still a skill set that's not really developed to the point that it should be for our profession. And so I think you're filling this great void that has to be addressed.
Oh, well, thank you. And
if it's true for attorneys, let me just add to that one other thing. You know, while our podcast focuses on solo and small firm practitioners, I can remember the shock that I had when I got contact from the first chiropractor who told me he listened to the podcast. He said, because we have the same issues. And then there was a dentist, and then there was a doctor, and they said that all these professional services providers who said, we didn't learn any of this in med school, dental school, chiropractic school. And so I can see in your situation with Tribeca Blue that while helping attorneys is one part of it, you also have a whole another world of professional services that are in the same boat.
Yeah. It's everyone can benefit from learning how to communicate well. I mean, just everyone. That was a struggle when I started. I wanted to help everyone because I thought everybody, you know, everyone can use this.
Sure.
You know, I could use this. It doesn't matter what level you're at. Everyone can use this. And, you know, really had to realize that I you know, you, what do they say? If you're marketing to, you know, or you're trying to help everyone, you help no one, something like that. Really had to figure out where we're going to be the people that were going to benefit the most from what I was able to craft for them. And it is in every industry. And it's professional, it's personal too. My very first training session that I did in Denver when I had just started out was at a big law firm in Denver. And I went in, I was really nervous. And I was talking about, you know, public speaking, top 10 ways, you know, top 10 tips for public speaking to these incredibly accomplished, you know, former Supreme Court clerks and, you know, all these just, you know, in this world that I had not been in
for
many years, heavy hitters. And I was just thinking, like, I don't even know if my videos are going to play. I don't know how this is going to work. I, you know, I just was like, how is this going to go? But I, you know, I did my prep. I take deep breaths. I kind of, you know, give myself a bit of a talk. I practice my opening. I firmly believe you got to know what's going to come out of your mouth in the first 30 seconds. And I remember driving into the parking lot at this big, you know, big office building on 17th Street in Denver, where all the big firms are, and practicing my opening and what I was going to say, and did the thing. The videos didn't work. So, you know, I had my plan B and figured it out somehow, but it was, you know, everything that could go wrong went wrong, but ultimately it was good. And this one attorney got up at the end and, you know, was asking for some takeaways. And he said, you know, I have to give the toast at my best friend's wedding next weekend. And this has helped me figure out exactly how I want to do it in the best way I can do it. And I thought, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, what a crossover.
That's awesome.
What a crossover.
Yeah.
So tell us, let's kind of focus then in with the remaining time that we have on just exactly what kind of services Tribeca Blue does offer, particularly the solo and small firm practitioner who might want to take advantage and learn a little more about communicating.
Sure. Well, you know, the one thing about being a solo, which I imagine you have conquered this a bit with everything that you do, but is really, you know, forming that community and that mentorship. And that's something with Tribeca Blue that I aim to give with my coaching services, is that kind of mentorship with communication skills. Because I, you know, was a lawyer, because I'm still a licensed lawyer, even though I'm not practicing, I get it. You know, I get what kinds of skills are really important. And they're not just when you go into court. So I do offer trial coaching. Okay. And trial training. So I do one-on-one sessions with attorneys where we develop trial themes. We work out witness order. It's really tailored to exactly what the attorney needs. And I will even go to court with them and watch and help and, you know, be able to give feedback afterwards so that they can kind of, you know, get a true sense as the trial's going on, what is really resonating, maybe what's not, how we can hone things. So that's a service I offer as well.
Sort of like taking the golf pro onto the golf course with you.
You got it. You got it. And that's something attorneys don't get a lot of feedback.
No, of course not. Particularly solos and small
talk. Yeah.
Because they don't have the personnel and the firm legacy to provide that mentorship.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, what better than to kind of have someone who's done this, lived it, breathed it, did it for years, knows what they're doing, to kind of be your sounding board throughout all aspects of your trials, that when you go in, you feel really confident with what you're doing in terms of representing your client and doing the best job you possibly can. So that's one part of it. And then for solos, you know, it's not just being on trial. As a solo, right, you're out there doing business development, you're out there doing marketing, and of course, you're out there, you know, with your clients. And the kind of client service that solos offer, I think, can be so differentiating in your firm.
Yeah, we talk about that all the time. You're so right. I mean, a lot of solos never see the inside of a courtroom.
Right.
So, but those communication skills that you're talking about are necessary when you're doing, as you said, business development with referral partners or centers of influence or client communications, just as you said.
Yeah. And how, you know, you think about, you know, Neil, you're going to have a cup of coffee with someone or a Zoom meeting with someone, and this is a possible referral source or just someone you want to get to know who could be good in your network. A lot of lawyers don't necessarily know how to even start that conversation. You know, how to start it, how to be of value, how to end the conversation, how to follow up. Those kind of communication skills are things that I think lawyers don't think about a lot. And they're necessary to forming that network that's ultimately going to help you have a successful business.
Tell you just a quick story. I talked to a couple of attorneys recently. We were talking about just that issue, about how to be of service in your networking relationships. And one of them said to me, well, first thing I do when I get somebody together, I ask them, how can I be of service to you? I went, well, yeah, you've got the point, but I think your approach to this is a little bass backwards, but okay.
Yeah, all right. Exactly. So I do, you know, the thing that I love about having Tribeca Blue and about, you know, being able to offer services is I get to tailor them to each client. They aren't some, you know, cookie cutter, one size fits all giant business that you're just kind of plugging yourself into. I work, you know, I've worked with attorneys on exactly that. You know, how do you, back in the day when we used to go to networking events, how do you go to a networking event? How do you do it now on Zoom? You know, what does your background look like? Where do you look? Do you look at the camera? Do you look at the person? How do you end that conversation? You know, when it's getting close to the end, how do you do that in a really, you know, pleasant way that makes the, you know, paves the way for more conversation? How do you start that conversation? Not necessarily with how can I be of service, right? You know, it's all about connection. I mean, communication is really all about connection. It's about getting out of your own head and getting into the perspective of your audience, whether it's your client, whether it's your colleague, whether it's a jury or a judge or a television audience or a podcast audience. It's all about that. And so that is what I, you know, the service I offer is helping, especially for attorneys, figure out on those, all those different levels, their best means of communicating in the most comfortable way that they can, just being themselves, you know, being themselves. And as solos, right, you are your firm. you know, you're the advertisement for your firm. So every time you go to a networking event, every time you get on a podcast, every time you do an interview, every time you talk to, you know, a client or colleague, you are an advertisement for your firm. So how can you make each of those touch points stand out in the way that you want them to? And how do you make that just a general, an easy and comfortable way of communicating all the time to the point that it becomes second nature? And, you know, the bottom line, people always want to know, well, what is it? What's in it for me? Right. So I learn all this. What's in it for me? What's in it for you is not just being comfortable and confident, although those are amazing things, but your business is going to do well. That's how you get more clients. Yeah. That's how you get a sustainable business, you know, so that you can live the kind of life that you want. So that's what I do.
I don't know who it was that said it. And so I apologize for not giving proper attribution, but somebody recently said, be more interested than trying to be interesting.
And listen.
Yeah. And listen, right. Be more interested.
Yeah. I love that. That's a great quote.
Yeah. I don't think I've quoted it exactly, but that's the essence. And
great.
So anyway, yeah. Lori, tell our audience how they can reach out to you and Tribeca Blue Consulting if they want to follow up and maybe take advantage of the services that you have to offer.
Wonderful. Well, I love to connect. You can reach me very easily if any of this resonates with you, if you'd like to chat more, or if you just like to connect, you can reach me easily on my website. It is Tribeca, T-R-I-B-E-C-A, which most people don't know stands for Triangle Below Canal, the neighborhood where I used to live in New York. Yep. So it's TribecaBlueConsulting.com. There's contact information right there on my website. You can email me. If you've heard me on this podcast, which is amazing, thank you, Neil, for such a great conversation. Please let me know that you did. I'd love to know that you enjoyed the conversation. And I do offer free consultations. I'll be happy to chat with you, sit down for 20 or 30 minutes, talk about what your needs are, and see if we might be a good fit to work together. And if you're interested in having me come speak at an event, that is also something I do. So just, you know, get right on the website and contact me through there. That's the easiest way.
We'll have all that information in the show notes so that people who are on the treadmill or in the car can retrieve it easily when they get back to a place that's a little less cumbersome. Well, Lori, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with me today and wish you all the best. Come out to Denver quite a bit. We got family up there in Boulder. So I'd love to drop in and have that cup of coffee or
Let's
that adult beverage. Okay.
Let's do it. That would be wonderful, Neil. Thanks so much for the great conversation.
Appreciate you being a guest on The Law Entrepreneur.
And that's a wrap, fellow law entrepreneurs. I want to thank you for joining us today and thank my guest, Lori Gilbertson, for being a part of our show. Also want to particularly thank our sponsor for this episode. That's Ruby Receptionist. As you know, I've been with Ruby for a long, long time, and I speak very highly of them. I was a client of Ruby's long before they became a sponsor of this podcast, and I'm forever grateful for them for both reasons. And if you're grateful for this podcast, you could do me the very great honor of leaving us a rating, 5-star, hopefully, if you think we deserve it, and a review. Those go a long way in creating the kind of social proof that people need to find out about The Law Entrepreneur and become a part of our community. And in terms of that community, if you want to reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter, just look for Law Entrepreneur and you'll find us. We have a lot going on all of those platforms. Or just drop me an email at Neil, N-E-I-L, at thelawentrepreneur.com. The hardest thing to do there is spell entrepreneur, but I'm sure you can muddle through that part. And as I said, we're looking for a new guest. If you have an idea for somebody who might make a good guest on the show, just let us know and reach out to us and be happy to chat and see if they're a good fit for our audience. So with that, I want to thank you again for being a part of The Law Entrepreneur and spending your time here with us today, and hope to see you again next week. Take care. Well, how about that? That's a wrap for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I'd like to thank our sponsors once again, as usual, Daylight by Market Circle, Spotlight Branding, Ruby, as in Ruby Receptionist, and our newest sponsor, Security Plus. If you have a chance, swing on by our website at www.lawentrepreneur.com. You can check out a bunch of information and resources there. And if that doesn't satisfy your needs, swing on by our Facebook page or Twitter page. You can find those just by simply searching for The Law Entrepreneur. And if you'd be so kind, I would greatly appreciate it if you go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and an honest review. If you find this podcast is helpful and that you're getting value out of it, it does help with our visibility and ensures that we're going to be there for another 5 years or so, as this has been quite the run. And I'm greatly appreciative of your interest in The Law Entrepreneur.